You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
Immigrants is a word reserved to park the blame for this big economic process on the poorest human beings.
The problem is that economic policies being directed by our government officials under the direction of the corporations in this country.
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It is produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. Between March and May of 2006, millions of people marched in the streets of U.S. cities and towns, from Fort Myers, Florida to Yakima, Washington, from Los Angeles to New York. People young and old, families, workers, activists took to the streets as part of one of the largest series of demonstrations in U.S. history. These unprecedented eruptions for immigrant and workers' rights began in response to a bill passed by the House of Representatives in December 2005, H.R. 4437, or the Sensenbrenner Bill. This bill would criminalize all undocumented workers, including friends and family, doctors, priests, lawyers, and community service providers. This is not simply an attack on immigrant rights. This is an attack on the entire working class. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we look at the growing movement around immigration from the perspective of people building the movement. We begin with Los Angeles resident and writer for the Tribuno del Pueblo, Maria Martinez.
I think that this question of immigration and the particular bill and different versions of it really needs to be looked at as the bringing about of a culture of fear in this community. It not only targets the most vulnerable workers, it actually targets everyone in the community in terms of this idea that you can't even help someone. If you happen to give someone a ride and they're undocumented, this government wants to make you a criminal. So I think that it's dividing people, it's very divisive, and that it's fascist in that it's really forcing us to say, you know, that it's okay that certain people get attacked and that eventually we'll be, you know, calling the cops on each other. The other thing I want to say that it's also about hiding certain realities that are going on in this country. My father was an immigrant and he had a second grade education. And he came to this country and I think for free learned how to weld. Then he got a job at the shipyard welding and was able to support a working class family in Los Angeles. And most of us went to college because of this industrial job. That period and that way of life is ending in this country. When an illiterate immigrant can have that kind of opportunity in that period, and we're looking at the opportunities college students have coming out of college, documented, sometimes white, they can't find the kind of job that they can raise a family of four on. They can't have what workers and immigrants in a previous period had. People of all colors look around and say, why? Why can't I now send my kids to school? Why can't I have what my parents had? I think that's the question that the government is really trying to dodge. And they're trying to dodge it by disengaging with most of the American people and attacking the most vulnerable at the same time. And I think that that's a big part of what this immigration struggle is about, is to lay the blame on those that are suffering the most. It's actually not answering the question that most people in this country have.
Next, we hear from Steve Teixeira, executive board member for the Academic Professionals of California. The organization is a union that represents professional staff on the 23 campuses of the California State University system. He talks about how corporate rule affects immigration and migration.
If we're going to talk about migration and immigration, I think it's really important for Americans to look at the whole thing. Because really, we've got migration of factories out of the country. We've got migration of capital investments all over the world. And this thing that the government wants us to focus on is only one piece that results, which is the migration of some people across the border here. It's a result of what's happened with that money. If you pull money out of the auto industry in Michigan, you're going to have auto workers migrate out of Michigan to Florida. Those snowbirds get there, and there's some competition for the kind of jobs that remain. But no one really looks at them as immigrants. When U.S. corporations move into Mexico or China, you know, no one talks about that as capitalist immigrants. Immigrants is a word reserved to park the blame for this big economic process on the poorest human beings. And that's actually what's happening. And I think it's very important we realize that this is the human result of corporate decisions on a global scale that have made the standard of living worse for most people in most places.
Director of Mobilization and Education for the Chicago and Midwest region of the Unite Here Union, Richard Monhe, provides an understanding of the process at play against poor working people.
So I think there's a historical context to this, and there's a perspective of the individual immigrant, there's a perspective of these laws being passed, but there's also a process at play inside the United States for poor and working people. And I think when we look over the last couple of years and the consequences of years and years of changes in our economic system within this country, right now the current wage is in real dollars is the equivalent in 1967. The minimum wage in this country is the equivalent to the dollar value of 1955, and that is, so we can't really purchase even what we could purchase in certain periods, even though we're making more money. And, you know, when you take a look at the neglect and the abandonment that took place with Katrina, with the loss of health care across this country, whether it's in California, that the 70,000 workers out on strike for 5.5 months over the issue of health care, when you look at the threat that exists right now for auto workers, whether Delphi, GM, or Ford, and the loss of their wages and benefits from $23 an hour to $10 an hour, which is, you know, they say there's only been 3 to 5 million jobs lost in the last 4 or 5 years. But when you look at the real job loss of jobs that pay good money, and then they're replaced with jobs that pay, you know, minimum wage or around minimum wage, you see a real change taking place in the whole job situation. It appears there's only 3 to 5 million lost, but when you look at the good jobs that have been lost over the last 10 years, you're talking about 17 to 20 million jobs. Even though there's been jobs created that have replaced them, they're lower wage jobs. So, you know, the Katrina situation, the job loss situation, and the Iraq war, the overall decline of the economy and the manufacturing base that has been dismantled over the last 30 or 40 years, you know, with textile going out of this country, clothing going out, the electronic industry, there's not a single television made, I believe, in this country. It's not immigrants who took those jobs. It was corporations and the government that made very direct decisions that was going to impact working people in this country. And that's what's created the real problem in this country. The immigrants are not the problem with our economy. The problem is the economic policies that are being directed by our government officials under the direction of the corporations in this country. And the scapegoating of the undocumented worker, the immigrant worker, is only a phase of what they're attempting to do to maintain control.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Family physician in Merced, California, Sal Sandoval, works on the California Labor Party's Just Healthcare campaign. He had this to say about immigration in the United States.
Immigration is really a worldwide phenomenon. It's happening all over the globe. Here in the United States, it's happening for the same reasons that it's happening in Europe and in Asia and Africa and other places. It's happening because people's standard of living is being driven down and they can't survive. During the 30s, this country deported 500,000 Mexicans, and many of them were U.S. citizens. They were able to survive when they went back to Mexico because most of them had some land or could do some farming. Nowadays, that isn't true. And that's showing through in the protests that we're seeing. People are showing a new defiance and asserting themselves in ways that they didn't when they were trying to get amnesty maybe 20 years ago. We have to look at them really as an integral part of the U.S. Working class. They've made significant contributions that can't be ignored. For example, the Justice for Janitors strike, the drywallers' struggles in Los Angeles, farm labor struggles in Florida and Ohio and California and different parts of the country. We're facing a dangerous time because the American people don't understand the situation, and the immigrant is always the convenient scapegoat. What's happened is the good jobs are drying up. With robotization and electronics, the jobs that paid $20, $30 an hour aren't there anymore. You can be sure the undocumented wasn't taking those jobs. But the people that had those former jobs, now many of them are homeless, or they're working two to three jobs just to make ends meet. They're being driven down to compete with people that are fleeing their own countries just to survive also. We can look at the undocumented as an ally, or we can look at them as an enemy. And right now we can see groups in this country that want to deflect the anger of what's going on, where we have people that are making profits based on our misery, that point the finger to the undocumented as being the cause of the problem, and that's not fair. When you consider that these same capitalists are making their profits anywhere they choose because they've got the laws on their side, they can go to Mexico and they can pay people pennies on the dollar for wages, but yet when the workers try to come over here to make a living, they're all of a sudden the problem.
Richard Monhe.
I had a conversation with a doctor one time. We started on the immigration issue, and he started by saying, well, we can't let everybody in. But the end result of our discussion is he said, look, I'm single. He says, I don't have no children. Why should I pay taxes for the children of other people? And I asked him, I said, well, who paid for the college you went to? Who paid for the library you studied at, the books you used in the library and whatnot? And there's a conception of, like, we can just abandon human beings. And underneath this, in terms of the competition between workers in this country on the shop floor and communities for basic services, I mean, they believe that sometimes immigrants are going to come and they're using our services and they're not paying into the system. And they manipulate all these things that have all been proven wrong. But yet at the same time, people will go sit in their lawn chairs at the border looking for immigrants. But in the meantime, the oil companies are raising the price of gas, which in essence gives us a major wage cut. When they raise the cost of gas to us, $1.50 over a year and a half, that's a major decrease in our wages, in our salaries. But ain't nobody demonstrating about that. Ain't nobody going to the oil company corporations, because they've got us focused that the problem is something different than the decisions that the government and the corporations are making as in coalition that is affecting our daily lives and jobs. But they got us fighting each other as they did back in the old days when it was the African Americans coming from the South to the North. The same issue is that if we could have an economic policy for this country that creates jobs and creates opportunities where people can live in a decent life, and we create the kind of economic policies that will facilitate the economic and technological development of some of these other countries under joint programs that would benefit us as working people, we could have open borders. People would come here and vacation, and we would go there and vacation. There's no competition necessary when you create a basis of opportunity for everybody.
Steve Tejeda speaks about the global economy and the complexities of race and ethnicity.
In public education, this global economy and this attack on scapegoating of immigrants really is played out in a nasty way. Places where there aren't too many undocumented workers, we're still seeing the corporate share of supporting the taxes for schools going down. We're still seeing not enough books, classes overloaded, not enough counselors. So that isn't something that undocumented are making happen all over America. But wherever there are undocumented, that becomes the justification for a government that's just reducing its commitment to the standard of living of the people, their well-being, their health care, their education. This stuff ripples down to such an extent we do have in some schools in Los Angeles some tensions between African Americans and Latinos. And all this stuff on the news and all the stuff that parents bring home from the workplace discussion starts to ripple. Now, at the same time, there's a lot of kids working together on things. there were white and African American kids who actually did join these walkouts against the Sensenbrenner Bill. But there are real conflicts. At one high school, Jefferson High School, Tribuno del Pueblo had an article about how these fights were used to increase pressures by this corporation, Green Dot Schools, to create charters. And sure enough, a month ago, the school board now has created 6 charter schools at this place using the ethnic conflict as the excuse. We have to do something different. Let's privatize. And I think that really is an example of something that's going on a lot. Now, how do you track out of it? It isn't enough to just tell an African-American, hey, well, ultimately we'll have more unity. And it ain't just enough to kind of go, well, let's go way back in history, although we need to do all those things. I think we have to really talk real concretely about what's happening. And listen, there's a lot of anger among people who fought in the civil rights movement to get a better standard of living. They have a righteous reason to be mad. They see that the promise of the industrial era and the civil rights movement they fought, those promises being yanked away from them. They're being told to blame that immigrant family just moved in next door. But like Richard said, that immigrant family didn't chase the TV jobs out of the U.S. In fact, TV factories now are along the border. And so that's not why this person's here. We have to spend some patient time, the American people, of various colors, languages, national origins, and talking to each other about how we've been told to perceive the problems we're facing. And I'm confident as we do that, we'll keep seeing that the real finger of blame it got to be pointed against these people who dominate everything in the economy globally. But the discussion rarely gets underway because we immediately are pushed into these knee-jerk responses that it's you immigrants are taking my black people's jobs, or it's you black people that aren't working hard and I'm here because I'm really willing to work hard. And, you know, the more that we get pulled into these short-term superficial little responses, it just allows that global economy to keep undermining the standard living of us all. What the young people did in particular, they were part of this enormous mobilization of immigrants and for immigrants' rights, but then they set up their own struggle by walking out of schools across this country. And I think what they've really done is shown this common set of problems, because they've in state after state, started talking against Sensenbrenner and ended up talking about how their schools were a mess. And I think more and more that's the thing that this wave of struggle led by immigrant Americans is going to do, just like the wave of struggle led by African-American Americans. And, you know, every time one section of our workforce starts to stand up against the abuse, it can help unleash other sections working together against a common exploiter. But that's the question. What will we each do to help make that happen? Or will we just let superficial thinking confuse what's really at play in this?
Sal Sandoval addresses potential reasons for some of these bills that attempt to criminalize immigrants.
I don't think the intent of the proponents of some of these bills is really to eliminate all immigration. I think what they want to do is to push it down further underground. And that affects all of us, because if we have people working in hiding, always in fear that they're going to be caught and rounded up and deported, they're going to work for less than minimum wage. Sure, some of them will be found out, and we can point our fingers at them and get them deported, but is that really going to help us? We are really seeing that our fate is tied whether we're born in another country or we're born in this country, because we're facing the same situation. All of us have to make a living. We live in a country that really has to keep its heart and its faith and its morality. As a young doctor, I can remember being put in the situation of having to decide whether a man was ready to be deported after he had his emergency appendectomy. I asked my supervisors, well, what should I do? And they said, it's the law. I didn't answer phone calls from the floor, you know, when the nurses were asking me if he's ready to be deported. Well, his family got together, they collected the money, they paid his bill, and the immigration backed off. But that was a horrible situation to be put in. I don't want to see any more of the young doctors that are that are coming up now being put in that situation. I also don't want to see people staying away from the hospital and dying because they didn't get care that we can easily afford, that we could provide so that the people don't have to be put in that situation. We have to look back at our own history. We have people that were revolted by the idea of slavery, having to turn in runaway slaves in the North. And that's the situation a lot of us may be in if we get some of these laws passed. We may be in violation of the law because our heart tells us that we can't deport or turn in this human being that's breathing and eating and has all the same needs that we do. Our Native American forefathers also in this country, they looked for the common good. They didn't put prices on the land. They didn't put prices on the food. We have the technology now so that we can provide everyone with all their basic needs. We have more than enough to provide health care for everybody. But the dollar means more than human lives. Everything is being sold. We as Americans have to look at and say that's wrong.
Maria Martinez discusses where the immigration movement is going.
As we can figure, there's going to be some compromise or some kind of supposed good bill that will probably involve amnesty for a good chunk of people. It will probably include militarizing the border, perhaps some form of a guest worker program. So maybe the marches will subside. But I think that the raising the question that the morality of this system, that number one, isn't working. Number two, has pretty much determined that if you're incapable of the two ways that you can participate in this system, either selling your labor power and buying goods, that there really is no place for you in the system. Or we're going to, you know, like someone else said, suppress you further down. And so the attack on, you know, the most vulnerable is what's happening. But what's raising the question is, you know, is this the kind of system we want to have? And how can we have a system, you know, we're in California, the fifth largest economy in the world or the seventh largest economy in the world, and yet we're closing schools and we're closing hospitals. The immigrant movement is really helping raise those questions. It's going to really have us look at particularly the Democratic Party and the Democratic legislature in California about, you know, how are we going to educate our kids? How are we going to have access to health care given that this economy is producing this amount of wealth? I don't think that immigrants are getting together and divvying up the wealth of the state among themselves. The big question is going to be, and I think that they're really pointing the way, is what kind of system is this? How can we produce so much wealth in this state? Where is it? It's in the hands of who? It's not in our schools. It's not in our universities. It's not, certainly not making its way down in wages. And I think that that is one of the really important contributions of this movement that can rally the rest of the working class around.
In order to create a better world, we must overcome our fear of one another. Steve Tejeda provides some details.
It's such a clear and simple thing that we don't see it. When corporate elites talk about free trade, all kinds of Americans say, yeah, free trade, that should happen. We essentially have a foreign policy demanding open borders for investments. Everyone thinks, yeah, that's how it should be. But those policies are going to lead to this human response of having to leave someplace and go somewhere else to survive. And that's where the inequalities have been allowed to happen for so long confuse us. Allowing this little grouping of less than 800 billionaires in the whole world to dictate conditions of life such that 1.5 billion people are living on less than $2 a day. I mean, if we want to keep going that way and see if we can be the one who has a little bit more, that's, you know, some of us will get through, our children probably won't. Or we can do what every generation, when it's hit these critical moments, has done, is generally masses of people have ultimately found their way and taken a big step forward. This step forward could really unleash a wondrous change in the standard of living of people. But if we're held back by fear on this immigration issue and this jobs issue, it's going to be the kind of fear we already see in our
upper middle class communities where there's so many bars and motion detector lights and dogs in the yard that after a while you can't tell who's fenced out and who's fenced in. And as American people, we're starting to be bombarded with propaganda to fence ourselves in into this corporate nightmare.
This is People's Tribune Radio. As the speakers have suggested, we need to be clear that this attack on immigrant workers is an attack on the entire working class. Where workers come from shouldn't matter. Whether employed or unemployed at the moment, whether documented or undocumented, workers are one class, united by the fact that they have to sell their labor power in order to live. The government's attempt to scapegoat undocumented workers is intended to divert attention away from the real source of economic crisis in the U.S. Scapegoating undocumented workers is also designed to get public support for draconian laws that take away the rights of all workers. All workers should regard immigrant workers as their brothers and sisters, and should see the defense of immigrant rights as the defense of everyone's rights. We end the show with an editorial from the June 2006 People's Tribune. It is read by Patti Vasquez, and emphasizes the historic and current basis for unity among the working class, in particular, black and brown unity.
Today, one out of every four African Americans lives in poverty. One in 10 African Americans is unemployed, more than double the rate for whites, a fact that has persisted for 30 years. But African Americans are not traveling alone on the road to destitution. Many millions of white workers share the same fate. Alongside them, millions of Latinos, including millions of immigrants. As the recent massive demonstrations in support of immigrant workers show, these workers are emerging as a potent force in the revolutionary movement of the new class of propertyless. African American workers and Mexican workers are natural and historic allies in the struggle for the emancipation of the working class. During the US Civil War, Mexico was a staunch opponent of slavery. In fact, in 1857, the Mexican Congress passed Article 13 of the Mexican Constitution, which stated that any slave that set foot on Mexican soil was immediately a free person. Today, due to the recent emergence of so-called free trade agreements such as NAFTA, conditions have been created for an all-out assault by US-led global capitalism on the wages, rights, and living standards of the workers of this hemisphere. Since the enactment of NAFTA in 1994, more than 8 million Mexican workers have been driven to migrate from their homeland in a desperate quest for work, starvation wages. But NAFTA is but a part of the broader process of globalization, which in turn is a direct result of the transition to labor replacing electronics-based production. Just as the support of the union by the Mexican workers and people contributed to the destruction of chattel slavery, so to today, growing class unity between all workers will guarantee the inevitable destruction of the system of wage slavery and the building of a new world.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society. A society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. Once again, it's 800-691-6888. You can also visit us online, www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks again for listening, and please tune in next time for People's Tribune Radio.